Hello, this is Paula Kaufman with the Herald and Review for Thursday, January 7th, 2021. We'll start with an article on the front page headlined, Capitol Siege, Protesters Disrupt Joint Session of Congress in Bid to Overturn Presidential Election. Trump supporters breach chambers, one dead after four-hour ordeal. Mayor declares curfew. Biden calls on president to defend the Constitution by Lisa Mascaro, Eric Tucker, and Mary Claire Jelonek, Associated Press, Washington. A violent mob loyal to President Donald Trump stormed the U.S. Capitol on Wednesday and forced lawmakers into hiding in a stunning attempt to overturn America's presidential election, undercut the nation's democracy, and keep Democrat Joe Biden from replacing Trump in the White House. The nation's elected representatives scrambled to crouch under desks and don gas masks, while police futilely tried to barricade the building, one of the most jarring scenes ever to unfold in a seat of American political power. A woman was shot and killed inside the Capitol, and Washington's mayor instituted an evening curfew in an attempt to contain the violence. The rioters were egged on by Trump, who has spent weeks falsely attacking the integrity of the election and had urged his supporters to descend on Washington Wednesday to protest Congress's formal approval of Biden's victory. Some Republican lawmakers were in the midst of raising objections to the results on his behalf when the proceedings were abruptly halted by the mob. Together, the protests and the GOP election objections amounted to an almost unthinkable challenge to American democracy and exposed the depths of the divisions that have coursed through the country during Trump's 4 years in office. Though the efforts to block Biden from being sworn in on January 20th were sure to fail, the support Trump has received for his efforts to overturn the election results have badly strained the nation's democratic guardrails. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said lawmakers were resuming the counting of electoral votes Wednesday evening after the Capitol was cleared of the pro-Trump occupiers. The president gave his supporters an added boost Wednesday morning during an appearance at a rally outside the White House, where he urged them to march to the Capitol. He spent much of the afternoon in his private dining room off the Oval Office, watching scenes of the violence on television. At the urging of his staff, he reluctantly issued a pair of tweets and a taped video, telling his supporters it was time to go home in peace. Yet he still said he backed their cause. Hours later, Twitter, for the first time, locked Trump's account, demanded that he remove tweets excusing violence, and threatened permanent suspension. A somber President-elect Biden, 2 weeks away from being inaugurated, said American democracy was under unprecedented assault, a sentiment echoed by many in Congress, including some Republicans. Former President George W. Bush said he watched the events in disbelief and dismay. What happened here today was an insurrection incited by the President of the United States, said Republican Senator Mitt Romney of Utah. There were harsh words from major business organizations and the Republican National Committee, too, suggesting uneasy relations with Trump were skidding into divorce as he leaves Washington. Our soldiers have died carrying the American flag into battle for our freedom, tweeted RNC Communications Director Michael Ahrens. Trump, unrepentant, tweeted, These are the things and events that happen when a sacred landslide election victory is so unceremoniously and viciously stripped away from great patriots who have been badly and unfairly treated for so long. Remember this day forever. The domed Capitol building has for centuries been the scene of protests and occasional violence, including a 1954 shooting involving Puerto Rican nationalists. But Wednesday's events were particularly astounding, both because they unfolded at least initially with the implicit blessing of the president, and because of the underlying goal of overturning the results of a free and fair presidential election. Tensions were already running high when lawmakers gathered early Wednesday afternoon for the constitutionally mandated counting of the Electoral College results, in which Biden defeated Trump 306 to 232. Despite pleas from Republican Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, more than 150 GOP lawmakers plan to support objections to some of the results, though lacking evidence of fraud or wrongdoing in the election. But Pence, in a statement shortly before presiding, defied Trump, saying he could not claim unilateral authority to reject the electoral votes that made Biden president. Shortly after the first GOP objections, protesters fought past police and breached the building, shouting and waving Trump and American flags as they marched through the halls. Lawmakers were told to duck under their seats for cover and put on gas masks after tear gas was used in the Capitol Rotunda. Some House lawmakers tweeted they were sheltering in place in their offices. Representative Scott Peters, Democrat of California, told reporters he was in the House chamber when rioters began storming it. "Security officers made us all get down. You could see that they were fending off some sort of assault, it looked like. They had a piece of furniture up against the door, the entry to the floor from the rotunda, and they had guns pulled," Peters said. Staff members grabbed the boxes of Electoral College votes as the evacuation took place. "Otherwise," said Senator Jeff Merkley, Democrat of Oregon, "the ballots likely would have been destroyed by the protesters." Trump supporters posting on internet forums popular with far-right fringe elements celebrated the chaos. Messages posted on one turned from profane frustration over the content of Trump's speech to glee when supporters stormed the building. At least one leading figure was live streaming video from inside the Capitol during the siege. The mob storming of Congress prompted bipartisan outrage, as lawmakers accused Trump of fomenting the violence with his relentless falsehoods about election fraud. Several suggested that he be prosecuted for a crime, which seems unlikely 2 weeks from when his term expires. "I think Donald Trump probably should be brought up on treason for something like this," Representative Jimmy Gomez, Democrat of California, told reporters. "This is how a coup is started, and this is how democracy dies." Decatur area residents in D.C. at home react, by Jeanette Beckett, Washington. Bethany resident Neil Marshall, 62, and his friends Gary Clem, 70, and Al Rennert, 69, were in Washington, D.C. on Wednesday to demonstrate their frustrations along with thousands of others. "We're here because of the steal," Marshall said. "We're all fed up with it." The three men were among the crowds near the Washington Monument and listened to President Donald Trump's speech. They then moved to the Capitol building. "Along with about 1 million or 2 million people," Marshall said, "there were a bunch of people." As the crowd closed in on the Capitol, they were met with tear gas, they said. "We had to back off for a little bit," Marshall said. But the crowd just kept coming. Other protesters encouraged the group to move in and get closer to the Capitol. "But this was nonviolent," Marshall said. "People weren't there to cause trouble," Rennert said. "They didn't have weapons, but there were a lot of signs and flags." The men were able to approach the Capitol and Washington Monument, but did not make it into the buildings. After a day of protesting, the trio headed back home, back to the socialist state of Illinois, Clem said. Rennert learned about the protest and invited others to join him. "We were going to have maybe 6 people go, but it turned out to be the 3 of us," he said. The men said they wanted to contribute to the protest because of their concerns and worries. "It's whether we're going to go socialist or whether we're going to keep capitalism," Marshall said. "We're very worried about our grandchildren." Back home, reaction to what they saw unfold in Washington was unnerving and one of frustration. "I'm all for freedom of speech and peaceful protests. Unfortunately, there are some people who take these rights as an opportunity to invoke violence and destruction," said Christy Clifford, 38, Decatur. "It's heartbreaking and appalling to see people vandalize and invade Capitol Hill. The images of these people climbing the walls, bashing windows, and fighting the police are so frustrating. There's no excuse for this. It changes nothing. This is not the way to make constructive change, and I was surprised that President Trump didn't say more about this. As a Republican, I am disgusted by all of it and pray that our beautiful country will pull together soon. Chaos and rioting has never worked to change anything, and it never will," she said. Laura Zimmerman, chairwoman of the Macon County Democratic Party, learned about the chaos in Washington, D.C. by mid-afternoon. "This is what happens when you have Trump constantly lying about the election and a party that has been too scared to stand up for him," she said. Fortunately, she was not aware of anyone living or working on Capitol Hill Wednesday. "But I'm worried for all the people caught in the middle of this," Zimmerman said. "I can't imagine what it's like to be there." Deontay Helm, 28, of Decatur, is bothered by the way people view this differently than the protests that took place over the summer. I think that it's a small sample of the population, and it kind of gets misrepresented in the media, blown up for sure. And it's like fueling this turmoil that we have between the two political parties, and also feel like the action of those few can't judge the entire population. Like we can't judge all Trump supporters based on these actions. She added, but I think that as Americans, we're learning from this, and we're seeing how history evolves, and hopefully we're going to get better. Nancy Buckles, 35, of Decatur, said the images are terrifying. It is terrifying to think that they're allowed to march into a building and terrorize people. When the protesters are BLM, they get tear gassed, shot at major force. Those terrorists got to walk in and out untouched. Hypocrites. I thought them capable of something like this, but I am embarrassed that it came to this. HSHS St. Mary's employees receive second COVID vaccines, by Danette Beckett, Decatur. HSHS St. Mary's Hospital administered the second doses of the Pfizer-BioNTech COVID-19 vaccine on Wednesday. The second dose of the vaccine is given 21 days after the first dose. One of the first hospital employees to receive the first and second vaccines was registered nurse Ryan Williams. The first dose was given on December 16th. The administration of these second doses is just as important as the first doses we gave a few weeks ago, said HSHS St. Mary's Hospital Chief Medical Officer Dr. Ryan Jennings. The second dose is critical to achieve the level of protection that was seen in the trials. Without it, our goal of halting the pandemic will not be successful without completing the series. When the vaccines are offered to the community, we urge people to make sure they get both doses. Ryan Williams said his reaction to the first vaccine was mild, with just a sore arm. He was eager to get the second dose. I was glad to get my first dose, and I'm glad to get this second one to keep my patients and colleagues safe, Williams said. We can see the light at the end of the tunnel. Miller, Hitler, right on one thing. New U.S. representative from Illinois criticized for comment, by Scott Perry, Washington. Mary Miller, the newly sworn-in member of Congress from Oakland, told those taking part in a rally Wednesday outside the U.S. Capitol that Adolf Hitler was right on one thing. Her comments were captured on a video and posted on Twitter by a woman in the crowd. The comments have prompted a host of negative responses. If we win a few elections, we're still going to be losing unless we win the hearts and minds of our children. This is the battle, Miller is heard saying in the video. Hitler was right on one thing. He said whoever has the youth has the future. Miller represents the 15th Congressional District, having replaced John Shimkus, who chose not to seek re-election. Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker addressed Miller's remarks in his Wednesday COVID-19 press conference. Let me be clear. Hitler got nothing right. This reprehensible rhetoric has no place in our politics, Pritzker said. Illinois Republicans cannot allow this to stand and must condemn this vile and evil streak in their party, Pritzker said. He went on to add that if Miller was the least bit interested in history, she would visit the state's Holocaust Museum and Education Center to learn just how wrong Hitler really was. The Chicago office of the Council on American-Islamic Relations also called for her resignation. We knew there is a white supremacy problem brewing within the ranks of the GOP that has recently ebbed to the top, including all the way to the presidency. But even by those standards, this is stunning, said Ahmed Rehab, the group's executive director. Miller, an ardent Donald Trump supporter, had previously announced she would oppose certification of the election results that had Joe Biden elected president. Everyone acknowledges that fraud did take place in this election, Miller said in a news release issued Wednesday morning. The point of contention is just how much fraud took place. We need to have zero tolerance for fraud, and we need to have confidence in our elections. The argument that there might not be enough fraud to change the outcome is irrelevant. America is not a banana republic. We can and should do better. Miller said her objection to the certification of the election goes beyond what happened last November. The objection here is about future elections, Miller said. We need meaningful election reforms in this country, and my hope is that by highlighting the numerous problems with the last elections, we can get the reforms we need. COVID, state. Regions could have restrictions loosened. January 15th, lowering of mitigations possible if requirements met. By Grace Barbic, Capital News, Illinois, Springfield. Statewide Tier 3 COVID-19 restrictions in Illinois could be lifted within 10 days. Starting January 15, exactly one incubation period from New Year's Day, any region that has met requirements for a reduction of mitigations will be able to move out of the Tier 3 mitigation plan, Governor J.B. Pritzker announced Wednesday. I'm cautiously optimistic as there are some early signs indicating that some regions have made real progress and won't reverse that progress this week or next, Pritzker said. The entire state has been under Tier 3 restrictions since November 20 in an effort to combat a potential holiday surge in cases. Under these increased restrictions, businesses are required to follow 25% capacity limits and close bars and restaurants to indoor service, a restriction that will still be in place even when a region moves back to Tier 2. Pritzker said that despite not seeing a post-Thanksgiving surge, he is still advising Tier 3 restrictions be upheld for one incubation period, or 14 days, to ensure infection rates remain as low as possible. After January 15, regions will be able to proceed past Tier 2, which would allow restaurants and bars to reopen for indoor service, depending on their future infection and hospitalization rates. Because of high demand for the COVID-19 vaccine, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices recommended two initial priority groups receive the first rounds of vaccination. Those in Phase 1A who are currently receiving vaccines include healthcare workers and residents of long-term care facilities. Phase 1B will include Illinois residents age 65 years or older and non-healthcare frontline essential workers. ACIP recommended residents 75 years or older be prioritized, but Illinois reduced the age by 10 years. Pritzker noted the average age of COVID deaths is 81 for white residents, 72 for Black residents, and 68 for Latino residents. Illinois Department of Public Health Director Ngozi Ezeki supported lowering the vaccine eligibility age, noting that Latino and Black residents have statistically been dying from COVID-19 at three times the rate of white residents. About 3.2 million people throughout the state would be eligible for vaccination in Phase 1B. These essential workers include first responders, education workers, manufacturing, distribution, and agriculture workers, grocery store workers, U.S. Postal Service workers, public transit employees, corrections workers, and incarcerated people, among others. The Illinois National Guard will be assisting in the development of mass vaccination sites. The state will also be increasing the number of providers to support widespread testing when the time comes. Phase 1B will begin once Phase 1A is substantially complete, but a specific time period is not yet clear. Although about one-third of the healthcare workforce has already been vaccinated, Pritzker said many healthcare workers and long-term care facility residents are still receiving the vaccine. Ongoing vaccine administration and a decrease in federal vaccine distribution could delay the move to the next phase. City Council candidate addresses Decatur violence, by Danette Beckett, Decatur. Hope for the community is only the first step in helping clear the city of gun violence, according to Marty Watkins, candidate for Decatur City Council. But it's going to take all of us to work together, he said. Watkins hosted an event Wednesday morning on Decatur's Central Park stage, addressing solutions regarding the violence in the community. How many more Black lives must be inflicted with gunshot wounds or killed in this city before we realize we have a crisis on our hands, Watkins said. Solving the problem doesn't affect the Black community only, according to Watkins. Violence and murder is morally wrong, he said. Watkins is one of 13 candidates seeking three available seats on the Decatur Council. A primary will be held on February 23rd to reduce the number of candidates to six. The general election is April 6th. During his speech, Watkins said he is developing a program to target neighborhoods that have been inflicted with high rates of poverty, unemployment, gang membership, and high dropout rates. This federal program is designed to reduce violent crimes and make our neighborhoods safe for everyone, he said. With the involvement of the community, we can get things done. Decatur resident Tim Smith, 47, attended the event to support Watkins and hear what the candidate had to say about the violence in the city. Marty is willing to reach out to help the community and do what he can, Smith said. He's willing to make a change. The plan Watkins hopes to bring to the city council continues to be fine-tuned to fit into Decatur's neighborhoods. What we need to do now is neighbors need to become neighbors, Watkins said. We need to cooperate with our law enforcement agencies, give them information that's going to cut down on some of this violence. Watkins addressed the government's role in protecting the rights of all people. The Decatur City Council has a broad mandate to provide good government, develop and maintain a safe and viable community, he read from a February 2020 City Council policy. The City Council must take an active role in helping find a solution. Watkins added the Decatur Police Department and the community to the list of those needing to be part of the solution. It is especially important that we as a community come together collectively with ideas and a plan to help resolve this matter, Watkins said. Decatur Family YMCA gets new CEO by Scott Perry, Decatur. The Decatur Family YMCA has a new chief executive officer. Dominic Santomassimo comes to Decatur from Kansas City, having most recently served as North District Vice President and Executive Director with the Greater Kansas City YMCA. He starts his new duties on February 1st. He replaces Matt Whitehead, who spent six of his 13 years with the local group as CEO. Whitehead resigned in August to join Scott State Bank. We're excited to have Dominic Santomassimo as our new CEO, said Nikki Fenderson, search committee chair. We believe he has the experience and proven leadership skills to successfully help our Y make an even greater impact in our community. According to a news release announcing the selection on Wednesday, Santomassimo managed the Platte County Community Center South YMCA, supervised three centers, and a program center. He has an impressive track record, which includes managing budgets of $4 million and above, as well as leading annual support campaigns, developing board leaders, and cultivating relationships with community and government leaders. His 20 years of YMCA leadership experience includes serving as executive director of the O'Fallon, Illinois, and Clinton County YMCAs in the Gateway region. He's been involved with a number of feasibility studies, one of which led to the founding of the Dallas County Y in Buffalo, Missouri. He has extensive program background as a camp director and program director, leading aquatics, fitness, and school-age programs. Santomassimo has a bachelor's degree in recreation management from Indiana State University. I am truly honored to begin the next phase of my Y career as the CEO of the Decatur Family YMCA, and I'm looking forward to serving Decatur and Macon County, Santomassimo said. The Y has shaped my life, and it is my goal to give that gift to others whenever possible. It will be my pleasure to join with the talented board of directors and staff leadership teams to continue the Y's 143-year history of service to Decatur in the areas of youth development, healthy living, and social responsibility. Report: Walters hired by Illini. Missouri Defensive Coordinator will serve same role by Joey Wagner, Champaign. According to a report, Brett Bielema has added the first piece to his defensive staff. Illinois' new head coach has selected Missouri Defensive Coordinator Ryan Walters to the same position at Illinois. Football Scoops first reported the news, which was confirmed by ESPN's Adam Rittenberg. The university has not made the announcement official. Earlier in the week, Football Scoops reported Bielema's interest in Walters. Oklahoma State defensive coordinator Jim Knowles and Wofford head coach Josh Conklin as candidates. Walters, 34, has been at Mizzou for the past six seasons. The first five were under former head coach Barry Odom, and Walters spent last season as defensive coordinator under Eli Drinkwitz. Walters has coached safeties and defensive backs all six seasons. He was co-defensive coordinator from 2016 to 2017 and has been the defensive coordinator for three seasons, from 2018 to 2020. The Tigers were 66th in total defense and 85th in scoring defense in 2020. In 2019, the Tigers ranked 14th nationally and 3rd in the SEC in total defense, 312 yards per game, 17th nationally and 6th in the SEC in scoring defense, 19.4 points. Walter's defense was 8th in passing yards allowed in the nation and 2nd in the SEC, 179.3 yards per game. According to the St. Louis Post-Dispatch early last year, Walters agreed to a contract extension through the 2022 season that pays him $900,000 a year, the highest salary on Drinkwitz's staff. Last February, Walters interviewed for the head coaching job at Colorado, his alma mater. The Buffaloes instead hired Carl Durrell. Bielema has hired Tony Peterson as offensive coordinator, Bart Miller as offensive line coach, and Tank Wright as director of strength and conditioning. Family Video finally closing all stores, ending long run, by Robert Chanek, Chicago Tribune. Family Video, the suburban Chicago-based video rental chain that outlasted Blockbuster, VHS tapes, and the Be Kind, Rewind mantra, is closing its doors and calling it quits after 42 years. The chain, which survived the advent of online video by locating its brick-and-mortar stores and DVD rental offerings in small towns across the Midwest, announced Monday that its business had fallen victim to the pandemic. The impact of COVID-19, not only in foot traffic, but also in the lack of movie releases, pushed us to the end of an era, said Keith Hoogland, CEO of Highland Ventures, the Glenview, Illinois-based owner of Family Video, in an open letter posted on its website Monday. Hoogland did not respond to a request for comment Tuesday. Family Video is closing its remaining 250 stores, including 30 in Illinois, and liquidating its inventory, including DVDs, candy popcorn, CBD products, and even the shelves. Founded in 1978, Family Video went from renting Betamax tapes to VHS to DVDs over the years and grew to an 800-store chain at its zenith. The company, which owns most of its retail real estate, evolved the business model, partnering with Marco's Pizza in 2015 to give customers another reason to venture out for their video entertainment. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Herald and Review for Thursday, January 7th, 2021. Please stay tuned.